Hello everyone, welcome to the episode 8 of The Two Vegans. Is that what it is?
7.
Fuck! I was so confident about this. You do it.
No animals were harmed in the making of this podcast.
Hello everybody, welcome to the new episode of The Two Vegans.
This is episode 7. So we're out and about. We're sitting at Louis Cafe in Jumeirah Park Pavilion today. Just grabbing a coffee, having a chat, that kind of thing.
You've got such cool stuff on you today. The mic and this red dot on your shoe.
And the bag.
And the green, amazingly...
Bottle green olive bag. The name of the company is A-U-L-I-V-E, olive.
Oh, that's what it was. That's like alive. Oh, vegan.
No, it's olive, like... It's a company based out of India that do cruelty-free leather products. So they have synthetic leather, basically, and they do bags and other stuff.
Why are we recording all this?
I don't know.
Chirag has a new vegan bag and he's just showing off. It is quite cool, though.
Right. So on our last episode, we talked about... we did quite a recap of different news in the vegan world, right? So got some interesting feedback there. But yeah, do check it out if you haven't. And on today's episodes, Hito, what are we going to do? Do we not have a topic today? Are we just going to wing it?
We're going to speak about tampons today.
Oh dear. That's our episode. Wait. No. I didn't agree to this. To expand on what Hito is saying, because she's trying to clickbait you into listening to this episode.
Yeah, by using the word tampons.
We're actually going to try and talk about some things that seem vegan but aren't. So we each of us have got a couple of things that either we wanted people to know about, but perhaps also shocked us, and we learned that they were non-vegan and or involved animal cruelty. The first one, we're going to talk about a couple of specific ones, but I think I want to just mention, you know, like a food-related one as well, like a little bit of something in processed foods, I think. A bit of a surprise to learn things like apple juice is... not necessarily vegan. Some apple juices are filtered using fish bladder. This also reminds me a little bit about something I'd referred to in an earlier episode regarding tapenade, olive tapenade. Olive tapenade is actually it's basically an olive paste, right? But I learned recently there are some restaurants here that add anchovies, I guess, to uplift the flavor a little bit. But this is not something that they tell you. So, you know, when they serve you olive tapenade while you're eating bread at the start of a restaurant, you don't realize that you're actually consuming fish in the process, which is a bit weird that they don't put that disclaimer out there. Going back, I mean, you know, apple juice is one that they use, and there are quite a few juices like that. I don't want to single any particular brand out just yet, but I recommend two things. One is check the ingredients, and two, stick to fresh juices. At least stuff you know that, you know, isn't being diluted or processed with other stuff. There's a lot of foods like this, actually, that have this. So you even, and I'm sort of clubbing this into one category, but even like certain peanuts, so the packaged peanuts that you get.
No.
Yes. So certain packaged peanuts that you get, like sometimes they add, they have gelatin. The thing is, it's the flavored stuff, right? When they're doing the flavored peanuts like that, the flavorings contain things as well. So the peanuts, of course, themselves don't, but then the flavorings do. So you have, sometimes they use gelatin to get that flavor. I'm like talking about this, but my problem with this is, when you have things like jelly or jello, as it's called in the States, or you have, say, gummy candy, like gummy bears, gummy worms, those kind of things, you know, like they've traditionally used animal products to harden these foods and stuff. So at least there is some kind of understanding or some kind of expectation that this potentially has an animal product. I'm either going to check the ingredients, I'm going to avoid it, or I'm going to look for ones that have a nice label. And a lot of gummy candy today that you find here has that, where they have, like, it's vegetarian, right? Like, it tells you that they use vegetarian, they use alternatives to gelatin, either vegetarian synthetic gelatin or other thickening agents, agar and other things like that. So that's fine. But, for me, it's stuff like you would expect that your apple juice is basically, you know, juices of apples with some flavorings. You would not expect to know that there are, or some animal products are being used in that processing. We'll come to more of that in a little bit. So same thing for me with tapenade, where tapenade is not something you traditionally expect. And it's slightly bizarre. It's slightly also worrying that, you know, if you don't know, you're never going to figure out that there's animal products in this stuff.
That's interesting and shocking at the same time. When you say that you should check ingredients while buying your apple juice, what ingredients are people supposed to look for?
That's a little bit of a tricky thing, right? But there are certain things you can look out for. So things like casein, which I think is a big one that people put. So casein is actually, it's a milk product. It's a milk derivative, right? And then they use it in other things. And I've even seen what is branded as non-dairy cheese to contain casein over here as well. So I think that's something that you should be really careful of. So it's a milk product, but it gets labeled, and I think perhaps there is an issue there with the standards of what is counted as non-dairy and what's not. Or if there's a sauce or a dipping sauce that contains something, then they let you know. So that's great that they do that. But and we spoke about this a lot. Like, we sit and read ingredients at supermarkets so much more now than we do before.
Or ask a lot of questions at restaurants.
Yeah.
And embarrass our guests. And I know people think that we just sound very anal when we are asking a lot of questions, but it's better to ask than to regret later on. I mean, a lot of Thai food authentically involves being cooked in fish oil.
Yeah.
And I did not know that. So every time I'd be like, okay, I'm eating Pad Thai, and, you know, even the noodles would be like egg noodles, and I wouldn't know, like, what happened at this restaurant that I went to. For a very long time, you thought that the noodles were vegan because they told you so. And when I went and asked them, and they're like, oh, all our noodles are egg noodles. And I was like, oh, no, my friend eats here all the time. And he said they're vegan. And she's like, no, the only thing vegan here is the rice, not the noodles. Not only ask them a lot of questions, but ask them a lot of questions every time you eat there, because the answers apparently change depending on their mood. For all my junky vegan friends or my junky vegan curious friends, try looking up online about brands, packaged brands that are vegan. When it comes to juices or any other snacks that you're eating. When it comes to nuts, well, it's a shocker for me that nuts also have animal products in them in some cases. But when it comes to nuts, I think the best thing to do would be to buy bulk packs. Carry your own, plastic packs or bags to the supermarket and buy them in bulk. And you can probably go home and add whatever flavoring you want. You can add your salt or paprika or whatever. That way you save packaging, like that way you avoid packaging as well, and you know that your food does not contain any other animal products. But yeah, do some research online and you'll be able to find most answers there. Gelatin was also on my list, and basically gelatin is made by boiling all the flesh, whatever is consumed. After that, whatever the remains of an animal, which is their bones, their ligaments, their tissues, their tendons, etc., they're all collected and boiled to create gelatin. And gelatin is usually flavorless and odorless. It's usually used in jellies and marshmallows, gummy bears, and all those amazingly lovely candies. I'm just talking about it and just thinking about gummy bears. I feel like a cola gummy bear right now. But I've recently found out there are a lot of companies that are doing vegan and vegetarian gummy bears. As Chirag said, not only food, but they're made from a protein in an animal called collagen, and that is usually used in your lotions as well for skin tightening and stuff. So you have to be very careful about what you're buying when it comes to these things. Interestingly enough, even the sugar that we consume is not vegan during the filtration process of cane sugar. When you're converting a sugar cane into sugar, it tends to be a bit on the brownish tint of color. It's not naturally white as we see it. To make that color from brown to white, we use bone char, which is basically charred bones of animals, which is weird. Like, and then we separately consume brown sugar. So I don't know how this world functions. So most of the white sugar would probably be non-vegan. And maybe your alternatives could be coconut sugar or brown sugar or stevia, which is also good for your health. But at the same time, you can also use syrups like date syrups or maple syrup. There are loads of alternatives these days in the market.
So so I think we've seen a lot of sort of revisiting of the sweetening industry, and I mean everything from, you know, we've seen like sort of this high fructose corn syrup, which was like this big issue for a while, and now, you know, you see a lot of manufacturers moving away from it. But then they started moving away from it by using things like saccharin, other like artificial sweeteners, which then now have been linked to other things and diseases and stuff like that. And so thankfully, over the last few years, we've seen so many alternatives come up in the market. And you've mentioned tons of them, right? Whether it's agave or maple syrup or... and then, you know, I mean, even we've been using things like date syrup, especially in this region. as a sweetener as well. So, and there are also, so interestingly, like this company called Teavana, which is now bought out by Starbucks essentially, and they're shutting down. So I don't know if they'll continue to sell this product, but they had a beet sugar. Right, which is so essentially what they do is they extract the juice from beetroot, and then they concentrate the sugar out of it, right? And it's a really it's meant to be a natural sugar. I think if I remember correctly, it's predominantly comes from I think it's Ireland or something like that. But anyway, thanks. You know, sort of the tea industry actually focuses on is the fact that this white sugar and the cane sugar that you're referring to actually alters the flavor of the tea. And so one of the reasons why Teavana came out and started doing this this beet sugar is so that it's supposed to sweeten your tea without messing chemically with the tea itself and then altering its flavor. And so you have a better tea experience, so to speak. So I started using that actually like a couple of years ago when I wanted to make iced teas and other things in the summer and stuff like that. So I'm not someone that generally drinks sugar in my coffee and stuff anyway. But that's when, but for iced teas, like I do need it. And so I started using that. So I think these kind of alternatives, look for them. They are available in the markets here. They're available like everywhere. Unfortunately, like I said, Teavana being bought out by Starbucks, they've actually discontinued their store. So now you get Teavana stuff inside Starbucks. So I don't know if they will continue this beet sugar production. I hope they do, because it was really a nice alternative over here. But as Hital mentioned, and then among the sort of artificial and or powdered options, stevia is the one, as Hital mentioned, because stevia is a lot more natural. It comes from a natural plant compared to you know, things like saccharin and other ones as well.
While Chirag was speaking, I was just looking up Teavana sugar. You find them on Amazon as well. And there are so many other options of sugar. Like, I never realized there were so many different options. Obviously, they're more niche, so you will probably have to buy them online from specialty shops. But there is amber sugar, an ideal tea sweetener. These crystals are sugar in its purest form. And then there is Chinese rock sugar. Like, there's so many different kinds of sugar. Did you find any difference in your iced tea when you made it with Teavana?
Yeah, there is. So the flavor is a bit different. So now I could argue that means that the flavor is different, because now I'm actually tasting the tea and it's only sweetened versus the tea being altered in the way that they describe. So I don't know how true that stuff is. Obviously, I don't have any scientific testing of that. But there is a bit of a difference. But you feel it, and then like now if I go to a place and I have iced tea that's sweetened normally, it tastes a bit odd now for me personally, because I'm just used to drinking that. I still have like some sugar left over from my initial batch before they closed down, so I do make them, and now that the summer will hit, it's likely. But there is a slight difference in the way it's flavored, and I've given it to friends who've then used it. I mean, I had a friend who was actually looking to get away from using refined sugar, but is a big fan of desserts and didn't like, kind of couldn't adjust, you know, was trying to figure out like, how do I do this with by giving it up? And I was like, hey, you know, I've got this natural sugar, why don't you try this out? And so that's what they used for like a week or 10 days or something, as long as the amount I gave. And so it is all of these sugars, by the way, although they started out as accompaniments to tea in particular, because tea is the one that is directly affected by this, or at least like the specialty tea shops understand that, you know, the chemical aspect of doing it right. So you'll find even a lot of specialty tea shops here will serve you brown sugar, or they'll show you like sugar crystals on a stick, as opposed to serving you refined sugar. And that's the reason for that. So, but the advantage is then, you know, those things can be reused and worked into desserts, worked into other things that you do. Or so, you know, you don't have to give up on sugar per se, but you can find sort of better alternatives and more natural alternatives, and they take some getting used to, but you know, in the long run, they're better for you.
And before we move on, the stuff that you're speaking about today is going to be a bit informational, and it's good for you to know where your food actually comes from. But I don't want people who are curious or are turning into vegans or are even trying to get into vegetarianism or veganism to be freaked out by this information. I wouldn't say extreme, but we know it's a bit more detailed, and people who are actually starting their journey or are planning to start a journey, this would probably give you an idea that there's nothing left to eat and being a vegan is difficult, or rather impossible. But if you're starting out, then it's just better that you cut out on animal products, the direct ones, like cut down on your dairy and your meat. Whatever we've spoken about until now are basically byproducts of the meat and the dairy industry. If there is no demand for meat and dairy, or there's a reduction in demand of the industry, then there won't be any need to sell these byproducts and make money off them.
and not necessarily because of us, but maybe perhaps a little bit because of us, that every episode we rule out another thing you can eat, and that, you know, if that's how you're feeling. But I think it's important to be conscious of this stuff. Like for me, the sugar one, it has actually a lot of other implications too. I mean, we talk about the vegan element about refined sugar, but actually refined sugar is and has been proven over time to be really bad for you, right? There are tons of alternatives. It just sometimes it takes a little bit of Googling, it takes a little bit of time in a supermarket to actually read the ingredients, but there are so many. I mean, even gummy bears, there are so many. There's an Australian company that packages here that actually, you know, brands them very clearly as using only vegetarian, you know, gelatin and vegetarian products in them. And why we know for the sweet toothers out there that it's a bit harder, that there are ways to slowly wean yourself off. This was the one that came as quite a shock to me personally, is how much alcohol is non-vegan. So a lot of animal products are used during the filtration of alcohol. So you see things like gelatin, flesh bladder, bone marrow, unfortunately. And even sometimes casein, which is again the milk derivative, gets used in the filtration process of a lot of wine, some beer. You know, this is again one of those things where you kind of, you expect, like tapenade, you would expect it to be vegan. You think it's being made from fermentation of grains and or grapes or some other things, right? And then you suddenly realize that, hey, you know, during the filtration process, they use things like bone marrow, egg whites, a gelatin, fish bladder. Like, honestly, like, this is one of those times I know for a fact that I have said, dear Lord, ignorance is bliss. God, knowing this is so painful. Thankfully, we have a solution for this stuff. It's a website called Barnivore. I don't know anybody behind them or anything like that, but good Lord, they have crowdsourced and worked at getting you a pretty comprehensive list of every alcohol you can think of.
Thank you, Barnivore founders. We love you.
So, I mean, you know, and I think what I really like, and someone who's a little bit nerdy like me, perhaps geeky like me, is that not only do they like, you know, not only have they listed everything and done all the brands and stuff, but they're really good about posting the proof that they have. So a lot of times it's, you know, confirmation from distributors, manufacturers that, you know, they do or do not use animal products in the filtration process. And so, for example, the beer Guinness, right, is vegan, and the makers of Guinness have come out and confirmed that. The beer Kilkenny, which I learned unfortunately, is not vegan. To use a buzzword, like, it is fact-checked with distributors, with manufacturers and stuff, which I think I really like.
It's funny, you know, I discovered this website, I think, a year ago, and I was so fascinated by how you were when you discovered it, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And I was just like, oh, obviously I didn't go on to become a geek about it. I was just like, search my favorite booze and be like, okay, vegan-friendly, non-vegan-friendly, it's as simple as that. And at that time, I remember seeing, I enjoy Corona a lot, so I saw Corona and there was vegan friendly and I was like, yes. And similar to Corona, Sol.
Yeah.
And I saw that Sol wasn't. And now that I'm checking, Sol is vegan friendly. So maybe those guys know that there is Barnivore that exists to call out their shit, and maybe they're now improving or changing.
The other thing I like too, like, they give you the whole history from the beginning. So for example, in the case of Sol, as you mentioned, in March 2013, it was clarified as Sol being suitable for vegetarians and not vegan. But then in January 2016, you know, the company email clarified that, hey, you know, the Sol beer in Finland is vegan because there's no isinglass, which is the fish bladder or other things I use. And then now from Sol UK as well, they got, you know, a clarification in January 2017 saying that, okay, there is, while Sol itself is not brewed using animal-derived products, there is a possibility of carryover from some of the other beers, because I'm guessing they're using the same facility.
Yeah, so it's like cross-contamination.
Yeah, cross-contamination type things. So I think that this is, and that's why I like this site as well. Say, for example, someone changes their process, and I've seen this, by the way, with some wines and stuff, where progressively over time, you know, the company has identified that, okay, we need to try to change it, we'll work it out, and then they come back to them and say, hey, okay, as of now, we've changed the things in our facilities, and therefore, as of now, this wine or this beer or this alcohol is now vegan. So it's really cool, and, you know, it's something that I think everybody should definitely check and make sure.
So moving on, the next item on my list are eggs. Eggs are one of the most controversial topics for vegans. So firstly, I'd like to clarify that in essence, eggs are vegetarian. Contrary to the popular belief, most eggs that you buy from the supermarket are not fertilized eggs. Hens would lay eggs regardless of whether they have mated with a rooster or not. Now, I'm going to tread on a very, very sensitive topic right now. this is kind of on a sidetrack or parallelly with what we are going to discuss about, right? But a lot of vegans, in order to convince non-vegans, call eggs as chicken period and call honey as bee vomit, just to gross them out. I am not a big fan of that approach. Like, you're not convincing people with facts and science, but you're just like trying to like throw words at them that would gross them out, and then they, all that happens is that people are like, okay, this person is weird and crazy, like I'm just not going to talk to them anymore, right? However, if you look at the science of how hens produce eggs, it's kind of similar to a menstrual cycle of a woman. So like, hens would lay eggs regardless of whether they have mated or not, right? And now the reason I want to mention that is because a lot of vegetarians think that eggs are not vegetarian. So that's not true. However, the reason vegans abstain from eating eggs is because of the factory farming involved, and also of the fact that vegans are against the use of animals as commodities in general, and which is something more on the lines of morality rather than the actual process of consuming that product. It's the factory farming that makes them non-vegan. So that's one point that I wanted to put out there. However, a lot of vegans believe that having backyard hens that are allowed to roam freely, eat nutritious food, run around wherever they want, get enough sun. I have always lived in cities, so I've never owned backyard hens or whatever. So the point that I'm going to make is not going to... It's just going to be informational and not my opinion. But I'm going to give two sides of the story that I've heard and researched about online and from people who own backyard hens. One side of the coin is where people are, as I said, against using animals for commodities, and they believe that the hens that lay their eggs consume it themselves. So when a hen is laying an egg, just like how a woman is going through a menstrual cycle, they lose a lot of nutrients from their body. It makes them weaker. And for that, to compensate for that nutrition that the hens are losing, they consume their own eggs, right? And they believe that when you take away that egg, that kind of pressurizes the hen to lay more, to replace that kind of to replace that egg that they have laid, and that kind of stresses them out. So the reason the factory farming of for eggs is wrong is because you are making a hen lay more eggs than they are naturally supposed to, which kind of rids them of all the nutrients in their bodies and makes them weaker. And on an average, a hen's lifespan would be between 8 to 10 years. But in a factory, a hen lives up to maximum up to 2 years because of this, right? Because they're exhausted by the end of it. When you take the eggs from the hen away, the hen has to produce more eggs than it naturally can. This is one side of the belief, right? Whereas on the other hand, people who own backyard hens think, say that it's untrue, because hens would lay eggs in a nest, right? Now, if that egg breaks, hens prefer, or rather hens like laying eggs in a clean nest, which is not messy. So if the egg breaks in it, they will eat it up so as to clean the nest to be able to lay more eggs, because they don't want to lay eggs in a messy nest. And people who own backyard hens have confirmed that they feed enough nutritious food to their chickens. And if you're giving them enough nutritious food, and hens actually are omnivores, so they feed on grasshoppers, bugs, mice, whatever they can lay their hands on besides the grain and the grass. If the hen is getting enough nutritious food from other sources, they do not eat their eggs. And if they do not eat the eggs, the egg just lies over there and rots away, and also has a chance of attracting predators. So that would take the egg as well as the chicken. So they may as well eat that egg. I cannot give a proper judgment call on this because I've never owned backyard hens and I've never seen how they are in nature. So, but I just thought that this information is good and should be out there for people to have a better judgment call on this.
One of the conversations I had, I think it was sometime last year, where I was asked this question: what if you have a farm? What if you have your own cow? And, you know, and it's just excess milk production, and that you're drinking only that. You're not drinking anything that's processed. You're not drinking it out of a factory farm, that kind of thing. Then would you drink that milk versus not, right? And I think, so at the time, and I don't think my answer's changed all that much, is that, look, you know, it's a wonderful idealistic example, but it's nowhere close to reality for me, and it's nowhere close to reality for most people, right? And so my issue at the moment is that the stuff that we are actually eating, drinking, and as we've been talking about throughout this episode, finding as additives in things like that, are coming from that source today. And which means that, no, I don't actually have the option not in the cities we live in. So your point is super interesting to me, because as of today, I would still stay away from this stuff. I wouldn't do it. And I don't. And at the same time, I mean, honestly, it's not even a realistic option for me to have a backyard or to have my own hens or any of my friends to do that. Bottom line, yeah, I don't know how I feel specifically about this story, but I think as of now, I mean, if you're talking in general, in terms of would I eat eggs or not, I mean, I think the answer is still going to be no.
We speak about how much water is being used and how much soil erosion happens because of meat eating, but it also happens because of producing vegetarian food, right? Crops like palm oil, like the consumption is huge because we are eating mostly out of greed and not need, right? So that's a very intense debate, as you said, which requires another episode altogether. As long as you cause the least harm by doing whatever you're doing, you're on the right track. Like, there's no black or white in veganism, you know. There's no such thing as going completely 100% vegan. If I'm walking, I'm stepping on ants. So that's what I feel personally. Do whatever you can do by causing the least of harm. Right, so this is a particularly very important point that I'd like to make now, which is tampons. And a lot of women, especially in the Western world, use tampons. Tampons, in full honesty, are a great invention, especially when you want to do any kind of physical activity during that time of the month. If you want to get into the pool or run or whatever. However, they aren't the best of the alternatives when it comes to being vegan or environmental friendly or even health friendly. Initially, when tampons were launched, they were purely made to be able to have a better absorbency rate. Companies started mixing in polyester and viscose rayon and other such synthetic fibers to it, which meant that they would then start carrying a very high risk of TSS. Now, TSS is toxic shock syndrome, which basically comes from a bacteria that is released by these synthetic fibers. And it is a very rare condition, but it is a potentially fatal condition. This bacteria is called Staphylococcus aureus. Right, and the symptoms are mostly like flu, like there would be nausea and a headache and stuff like that. So obviously what happens is that this kind of bacteria stays in your body for a very long time. Besides that, tampons are usually bleached before the end product comes in, and during the bleaching process there's a chemical called dioxins that are released. Right, now they are chemically related compounds that remain in your body for 7 to 11 years. I think this is enough information to tell people to stop using tampons, because we're literally putting a lot of chemically induced stuff right inside our bodies. According to WHO, and I'd like to quote them, dioxins are highly toxic and can cause reproductive and developmental problems, damage the immune system, interfere with hormones, and also cause cancer. Also, did you know, interestingly, dioxins are mainly produced by meat, dairy and fish. That's a major source of dioxin consumption, but so are tampons. Whatever points I'm speaking about right now are also eligible for sanitary napkins. Both of these, from not only being bad for your health, but they also for the environment. Most of the tampons and sanitary napkins end up either reaching the landfills or the oceans. And thirdly, when you're talking about animals, tampons are widely, even sanitary napkins for that matter, are widely tested on animals. which is weird, the kind of things that authorities allow to be tested on animals, like and the way they do it is pretty gruesome, right? So they usually test tampons on rabbits and mice, and what they do is they take female rabbits and they shove toxin induced tampons up their vaginas, sometimes overnight, sometimes for long hours. Yeah, and then they just, I mean, obviously, most of them just naturally die due to that toxins. But the ones that don't, then they are then sacrificed. And I use the word sacrificed because that's what the authorities use on their papers, that the animal was now sacrificed for vivisection. I am not sure why this still happens around the world. But the kind of animal testing that happens, like, I can't remember which celebrity said it, but somebody said it. I'm not sure why you have to test shampoos on animals. Like, people don't put shampoos in your eyes, period, you know? Like, there's no need to test that on an animal. Just put a label over there and I'll not do it. Yeah, so basically tampons or sanitary napkins for that matter do not help in any way. And these days the alternatives are again springing up all around the world. They're going back to traditional conventional methods now. So I am very much interested in the menstrual cups that have come out. They're silicone cups that can be used and reused for years. They don't go back in the landfill, and they don't add on to the plastic issue. They're good for your health. So check out some menstrual cups like Diva cups, Moon cups, Lunette cups, Luna cups, whatever. I mean, there's a proper chart online that tells you which size is suitable for you if you're a pregnant woman, if you've just delivered a baby, depending on the size of your uterus. Then there are reusable cotton pads and period underwear. So the brands like Luna Pads and Things that you can use and wash them and reuse them again every month. So that also, again, and because they're 100% cotton, they're not bad for you. And if you're still insistent on using tampons just for the sheer reason of convenience, then there are 100% cotton tampons. The likeliness of a TSS is very, very, very minimal in 100% cotton tampons, almost close to nil. So you can look at there. NatraCare does a lot of cotton, organic cotton tampons. Oh, by the way, they all are money savers. So if none of the above points are a motivational factor for you, then you just end up saving a lot of money in using these alternatives.
Sure, a lot of people would have found that super informative. Thanks very much. So I think that's, you know, we kind of wanted to touch on a few things that at the outset might seem vegan but are not. So I hope that was informative for all of you. As always, you'll find a bunch of links in the show notes to stuff that we talked about and sites that we spoke about and even products that Hethal mentioned. I think that's it from us from this episode. You can subscribe to The Two Vegans in any podcast player of your choice. Just look for The Two Vegans. We're also on Instagram.
We also have a new logo.
Yeah, we forgot about that. We launched a new logo. Check it out. See if you like it. Tell us what you think. And if you don't like it, maybe we'll...
Don't tell us what you think.
Yeah, you can also follow us on Instagram. Just look for the.two.vegans. Until next time. Bye-bye.
See ya.